The man of the hour is Ollie Warnes. It's an early hour in Perth as well. Ollie, congratulations and welcome to SEN.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks for having me on.
Did you get much sleep?
Not too much, to be honest. I probably called it early, though. The boys were carrying on still. They were celebrating, so it is early here, but we're up and at them.
You've got a demanding morning ahead of you. Do you have a full grasp yet of what it means to be the Brownlow medalist?
No, not at this stage. I think, look, this is going to take a while to settle in, probably weeks, probably months. It's incredibly humbling, and just to obviously know some of the names that won it before me and guys that I still idolise to this day. Probably the biggest one is Michael Voss, who had a lot to do with me at Port Adelaide, being a senior assistant. To have my name, I guess, up again next to his and sort of be similar to what he's achieved is very special, and I'm incredibly humbled.
Have you been a bit playful with it? Is it true that you text your sisters a photo of the Brownlow?
Yeah, no, I've sent them a fair few photos. They ride the waves with me and everyone involved, particularly back in Melbourne over the last 18 months. This has been their avenue on the weekends, watching Port and barracking for us very hard. So as much for me as an individual, this is a club award, and it's for them.
How thrilled were Mum and Dad when you got to talk to them?
Yeah, no, they're pretty up and about. Mum was popping a bottle of champagne at about 1 a.m. So that's very unlike her, and they were very excited. So I'm very happy for them. As I just said about my siblings in Melbourne, it's been tough for them in Echuca and isolated from seeing me over in Adelaide and coming in barracking. So their support has been enormous, and to see them so happy was put a smile on my face last night.
So you go into the count as favourite, Ollie. We'd spoken about this, a couple of weeks ago. Did you have a strategy? Was it a tense night? Was it excruciating in its own way?
A little bit, yeah. I probably didn't understand the nerves that I'd feel throughout the night, but the good thing was we had a lot of fun on the table. We had a heap of guys come over from Adelaide and support the night, and I guess that made it only more sweeter to see all them at the end of the night. I kept looking over when I was on stage getting presented, seeing those guys smiling, looking back at me, and it filled my heart with a lot of love seeing them there supporting me. So it's for them and our footy club.
Did you have someone keeping tabs as to how you were faring against expectations?
Not really. Probably midway through the night, I sort of spoke to Chris Davies, our football manager, and asked what he thought, and he said he might write me a few notes to put in my pocket just in case, and luckily he did that because I definitely needed them up there. But I didn't really have any expectations, to be honest. I knew it would be a tough count, and a lot of guys had tremendous years, so yeah, it was anyone's guess who was going to win it.
When did you think this is really on?
Oh, probably not till round 22 when I knew the Bulldogs game was Marcus wasn't going to poll in that game, so I knew it was done and dusted after that, and that was probably when it first started to hit me, and it wasn't until I was on the stage getting presented the medal by Nat Fyfe that first hit me, and as I said at the start, it's probably going to take another few months to sort of settle in.
Can you describe what it is when it hits you? What did you actually feel?
I thought I was in a bit of a dream, to be honest.
Yeah.
As a kid, you set out in the backyard and you want to kick the winning goal in the premiership or win the Brownlow medal. So to have achieved that is very special. Obviously, we've fallen short in the pursuit of a premiership this year and last year as well. But this gets our footy club a little bit of reward, I think, for a tremendous 2 years of consistency. And it's definitely not an individual award. It takes a whole club and whole team to get this result. So it's a testament to the footy club.
When you're playing the way that you want to, Ollie, which is what we've seen so much of this year, what's at the core of your game? What are you marking yourself on to know whether you're playing to the level that you expect?
Oh, I guess it's the contest I create. It's around stoppage. It's around contested possession and winning as much as I can. My game was very simplistic this year, and I understood my role to a T, and I think that helped me in executing it. I was able to find consistency, and once I got that consistency, it was easy to execute. So Ken and the coaches put it really clearly for me, and I almost saw my role as pretty simple to execute. So it took a lot of guys around me helping me out, and we're here.
So polling in 16 of 22 games is extraordinary, really. So the sustained level, is that the best level that you've been able to sustain across the season?
Yeah, certainly is. I think in previous years I've done it in patches, probably 6 to 8 games, but this year to do it in 16 is I'm very proud of. I think Mum said at the start of the coverage, she thinks I'm a bit of a stayer, and that's probably what I see myself. I'm a bit of a grinder. I don't have the talent a lot of other guys got, but I think I've got a lot of heart and a lot of resilience to fight it out. And when it gets tough, I keep going. So I'm proud of myself in that way.
Your journey's well recounted last night, Ollie. But to win Port Adelaide's first Brownlow medal, and clearly at a time where, obviously in recent years, there's been that moment to go, yep, this is my footy club for good. Does that feel significant to you?
Yeah, it certainly does. A football club with so much history, and to be the first one to win this for our footy club, I'm incredibly honoured to, I guess, be the first Brownlow medal winner, but to sit against McGarry winners and people that have represented our club since 1870 is very humbling for me. And it's a little bit of reward for a disappointing end to the year, but I know we'll be back.
Did you have that a couple of years ago, Ollie, where you had to decide, is Port Adelaide me for good? And you came to that full realisation?
Yeah, certainly. There were times I sort of had to think if it was the right fit for me still, and if I needed somewhere else to sort of, I guess, find a new lease on my career. And it didn't happen, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. I love this group. I love everything about our football club. We've got full faith in the list we've got, the future we've got over the last 5 to 10 years. So to win this award is, I guess, it puts that in perspective and really shows that if you put your head down and work hard, something can happen.
The tough part of it, Ollie, is have you fully understood what happened in that prelim yet, which was such a shock to us on the outside, and I imagine it reverberated pretty heavily internally?
Yeah, not as of yet. I think we're going to look at it over the next couple of weeks before we all head into state. We needed a little bit of time to heal. After that, obviously, it was incredibly disappointing. But at this stage, we can't put our finger on it. We've got no excuses in that game. We had our best 22 available. We had a week off. We were fresh. And the Bulldogs were coming off a 30 days from travelling from 4 cities. So we've had a look at it small, but we're going to have a closer look at it and assess, because we want to continue to get better. We've got full faith in our team, and we know we'll be back there next year.
Enjoy the breather, Ollie. Do you realise that your footy life has changed forevermore? You'll be introduced in any room you walk into as Brownlow medalist Ollie Wines.
Yeah, no, it's a bit rattling to hear that still, but I'm sure over the next coming months and years it'll start to sink in.
Terrific stuff, Ollie. Thank you. Well done, and enjoy the off-season.
I appreciate it. Thanks, mate.
Good on you. Ollie Wines there, the Brownlow medalist. The Monday Means Test is the staple of our footy season with David King. Our categories, like the big issue, the best bits, the worst bits, the pressure index, the debate, the curiosity, what they got right, what they got wrong, they fuel our season each week. Today, we set you up for the grand final through those categories. I know, Kingy, you've played away all weekend with this. So let's delve in, shall we?
So try to balance it out. So try to be 50-50, Melbourne positive, Western Bulldogs positive. So don't we're not slandered here in any way, but we're just going to pick through these categories and try and just work out what's the avenue to success for either team, and what's the best way there, or the most effective way there. And I think we start with the unstoppables.
So this is the big issue, the unstoppables.
Yeah, I really think that Max Gawn is something you can't stop. How does Luke Beveridge organise to defeat Max Gawn? Impossible to do because of his the hit-out purity, his ability to get forward. He's not a contested marker. As much as he looks like a contested marker, he's taken one inside the forward 50 this final series. So let's talk about what his craft actually is, and that's the hit-out stuff. So it's not through weight of numbers. It's not, because Melbourne are minus two clearances on their opponents through the course of the final series. So it's not absolute dominance through volume, but it's dominance through damage. So the ones that they do win, and the aggressive hit to Oliver on the fly and Petrarca on the move, it's only a step. It's only a metre in front of their opponent. But that metre becomes two, becomes four, becomes pure. And then you go forward and score. So they're averaging plus 37 points per game from stoppage in a final series, despite losing the clearances. So that's a huge number. And most of the damage is not really centre bounce. It's more forward half stoppages. So that anywhere centre forward. So forward 50, Max has actually been in for a few over the last few weeks because Jackson's been more than coping in the ruck. So Max is now getting that opportunity to grab the ball out of the ruck. We saw him kick a fantastic goal as one of his five a couple of weeks ago. So Max is something you can't stop. So to put a worth to it, through the home and away series, Max was responsible for starting 13 points a game. So he, whether it's hit out or his ability to win the ball back, he's responsible for 13 points a game. In the last two games, that's gone up to 45 in total. So it's almost doubled, 22.5 points. So it's almost doubled once the game has become more contested and clearly big games, finals footy, prelim finals. You win your own ball, you ply your trade, and if there's a vulnerability at the opposition, then it's expanded. So that's Max. So that to me would be Luke Beveridge's biggest headache. But at the end of the day, he knows there's nothing I can really do about this, except for what they do at ground level, which we'll get to later. But that dominance is something you cannot curtail. From the flip side, who needs to go big for the Dogs to have that unstoppable day that just says, we're home, we're on? And I think it's Aaron Norton. I think if Aaron Norton, he can be the reason they win it in the air. He can just have a 5-6 contested mark type game. Look at this season. He's taken 64 contested marks for the season. Only Harry Mackay's taken more. He took 6 contested marks versus Port Adelaide. So, you know, 4 of them inside the forward 50. They're the ones that you can't stop. So if he can get hold of May, doesn't matter what the next matchup looks like, because it's a lesser version of Stephen May.
Yep.
Whether it's Petty or, you know, we saw what he did to Lever a couple of times in the earlier clash in round 19. He couldn't go with him in the air. He's a third man in drift marker. He's not someone who can lock a contested marker down. 2-2 last week. What's he kicked? 6-2 for the final series. Can he be the one that kicks 4 straight in a burst and throw everything? You know, we talk about Mason Cox, that prelim final. This guy can do that. I have full confidence that he can get that done. And it's all off the back of that aerial stuff. So I look at last week. They went to Josh Shackey 13 times last week and only went to Aaron 6 as a prime target. Now, if you can flip that, I think Norton needs to be, he just needs to be the man for every entry. If you've got time to assess where to kick the ball, it has to go to Norton because he's such a dominant force in the air. He is Carey-like in the air. Do you see that?
Yes.
Do you think he can have that game? If you're a Dogs fan, can you visualise Norton having that sort of game? Because if he does, in my opinion, it'll be over because contested marks inside forward 50 are scores.
You could see him flying at packs and hauling down marks. Absolutely, you could. I can see that.
He's taken 34 contested marks in the forward 50 for the season, and as I said, 4 last week. What's the benchmark? What's the over under? I don't like getting the over. You're not a good.
So in a grand final, you'd settle for a couple.
Yeah,
but if you can make 2-4, or if you can make 4-6, that's your separation.
Yeah, and cause chaos down back.
Yep.
That's probably the spin off effect. You get rattled quick in finals. If you can't lay a glove on Norton, you know, even that first final at Port Adelaide there, you know, the Dogs' first 15 minutes, it shook the foundations of everything the Port were about. They actually lost their way. That's what I'm talking about. Can he Can he do that? And I think, you know, there's no logical reason why he can't. He's in great form, but they just need to go to him more. They've got to trust their own star. So I know that sounds a little bit convoluted, but I do think that Norton can be the reason that this game's separate, and it might just be in a burst.
The unstoppables as the big issue. Max Gawn, Aaron Norton, the best bits. The legacy piece that's stitched into every grand final is tangible here.
Yeah. Where do you sit? I mean, is it Max or Marcus? It's as simple as that for me. You know, the lovable ruckman, the flawed genius, you know, schooled by Melbourne's great icon in Jimmy Steins, you know, showing the way, he wears his number. You know, he plays with the same sort of creativity, you know, that Jimmy played with. You know, there's a little bit different about Max. He gets around the ground, but it's more the person, you know. He will be the face of breaking this 57-year drought. There's no doubt about it. Simon Goodwin's done an unbelievable job, and it's a full club thing to win a premiership. And Oliver's probably their best player this season, and Petrarca's right behind him. They've got a core of great players, but Max will be the man.
Yeah, there's no one else whose beard was coming with the paper on Saturday, is there?
And what about Marcus Bontempelli? I mean, if they could win the flag this year, he will end his career as the greatest dog of all time. I mean, you can talk about best and fairest winners and those sorts of things, but winning best and fairest in teams that are finishing down the table or just short of the mark, as opposed to, in my opinion, he should have won the Norm Smith in 2016. He's already a three-time best and fairest winner. This year, he'll get it again, make it four. He's got all the stamps, but to get two premierships at this stage of his days would be unbelievable. He's been voted by his peers as the 2021 best player. So there's none better, really. So I think when you're talking about separating factors in careers, you know, we always talk about comparing Rusciutto and Buckley and Voss and Hurd and these guys. I think Bontempelli, if he can get this one done, if they can win another premiership, he will go past a whole host of names that are automatic Hall of Fame inclusions.
Yep.
Post his career, and particularly if he can stamp it again and be top two in the Norm Smith again.
So there's that incredible fact which it sort of came back into the consciousness last week, is that only Ted Whitten has been to two grand finals as a Footscray player, as a Bulldog.
Yeah.
He was the only one in the 6 or 7 year gap. So there's a dozen who are about to create history. And if Bontempelli does stand there lifting the cup, so he'll be behind EJ. But with the second half of his career to continue to build on that legacy.
Yeah, and I can't compare EJ or even have that conversation, because there's better skilled people than I to do that. But, I mean, he does go – I mean, if he's not on par with him, he is challenging him if he could get the two, Jared.
Yep. So, and Max has got the – like, he's got the Dusty touch of last year. Like, everyone was in on the idea of Dusty winning the third Norm Smith last year. So he was the most accessible part of what was going to take place, I think. The retiring Gary Ablett, or the quest for three, that thirst that we would all see history, is Max has got that ringmaster quality to it. If you want to find a way in, the way in is through Max.
Yeah. I just feel like that character that Max is the reason why you have the environment you have. You know, we don't talk enough about the environment of a footy club. You know, being able to be yourself, but not having to be perfect. You know, to have some warts or flaws, and being able to go to your captain. I always say this. I ran into the great man Wayne Carey this morning, walking in here, and you just think, okay, there's something about being able to go to a captain that you know has your best interest at heart every time you talk to him, and he's happy to have a beer with you, or he's happy to have a coffee with you and be a bit different, go for a walk. Max is his own man. No one tells Max how to be, and Max doesn't tell anyone else how to be. He allows growth in every player. And look at, you know, young Bowie's come into this team, and he's been fantastic. He's played about six games, and I just feel like that's what you get. When you get an environment that allows everyone to be their best, you allow youngsters to just come in and do their bit. Salem now doesn't need to be best on ground. Oliver and Petrarca having a ball, just having a great time. Even last night, you know, on their phones, having a laugh. You know, Ollie's getting caught with some bread in his mouth. They're just being them. They're not trying to be some when they're not trying to be perfect and look great on TV. They're just being themselves. So this is as a result of what your captain sets up for your football club. So I sort of hope, in a weird way, I sort of hope it's Max, because Melbourne need Max. They need Max to, you know, to crown the, you know, himself Sir Max, really, and just be the answer for this football club that's been craving this flag for so long.
Legacy, the best bits in the 2021 grand final. What have you got as the worst bits? This is, I can feel this coming from bitter experience.
The worst bits. Look, I think there's going to be opportunity. There's going to be opportunity for someone early in game. And I sort of go back to inaccuracy, and inaccuracy costs flags. So you get a certain amount of opportunities in footy to hit the scoreboard. You got to take them. You know, I look back at history shows us. Fremantle, 2013, halftime, 1-6. St Kilda, 2010, at halftime, 1-8. Geelong, 2008, 6-12. You know, in 05, when Sydney ended up, beat the West Coast, it was 6-3 to 2-7 at halftime. That was a 4-point game, you know. So, like, you just, 4-point result, I should say, not a 4-point game. They're not a 4-point game. 4-point result. So, you know, it does come back to your own. You know, the Kangaroos, 1998, you know, 21-7 at halftime, and you only lead by 4. Like, so someone's going to have that chance. So I'm just having a look at some of the goal scorers or those that have had their opportunities in front of goals for these two teams. You know, Hannon's going at 50-50. Shacky, just worse than 50-50. Treloar, he's kicked 1-3 and 2 complete misses. You know, Bont's 2-3 and 1 complete miss. So you're going to get opportunity. You got to know. There's a big difference when Bont steps through, breaks through 50 and drives it home as opposed to missing the lot. Hawkins' miss last week was big. It was big because it shifts it rattles the group. So being able to kick them. You know, Bailey Smith, this is why we've talked about Bailey for a while. He's 8 goals straight, 8 shots, 8 goals through the final series. Yep. So that's what I'm talking about. No wonder he's doing the ice through the veins, because he's spot on. So Ben Brown, 3-3 and a miss. Petrarca, 3-4. Now, Petrarca's had his issues. So just, you know, there's people you talk to in footy, and they talk about those small forwards, you know, the Saints small forwards in that I can't remember whether it was 09 or 2010, but, you know, they had the game at their mercy. Where that first quarter, I don't know what they kicked, but they had 4 or 5 opportunities to just gap the game. So for me, the big concern is the start. You know, last week the Dogs, 7-2 at quarter time. Melbourne, 5-3 at quarter time. So those games, you know, you're not shutting the door, but gee, it's a big start. You're challenging the opposition to change their game. So for me, I'll be, you know, the worst bits for me is that probably I'm hoping that we don't put another name to this. You know, have a person responsible, because you want the team to fail, not one sole carrier of the blame. So kick your goals. Kick your goals, convert your opportunities, light the fire, gap the scoreboard, and hopefully one of the stars doesn't fail.
So what's your tagline for that, the worst bits?
You can't get a tattoo at halftime, Jared. No half tattoos. You got to get the job done. So that's the concern for me. You know, get the job done. Seize your moment.
Riadini's trying to pinch it. Think it over. He's trying to repeat his Chomford Stakes success. He's giving chase. Riadini 2 in front of Think It Over. Very Elegant. She's starting a motor now. Riadini being tackled by Very Elegant. And the Great Mare wins a 9th Group 1. Home best in the George Main. Very Elegant beat Riadini and Think It Over.
She's a very good horse. It's as simple as that. It's an honour to train a horse like this. She doesn't win Group 1. She runs second in them. In all distances, all track conditions, that's a rare commodity.
Chris Waller was moved to call Very Elegant a champion with the newspaper journos in Sydney in the aftermath of her 9th Group 1 win. It puts her on a pedestal alongside Northerly and Bone Crusher, Gunsind and Tobin Bronze. I think she's the most underestimated champion of my time following racing, because she comes so quickly after the Winx era, and these numbers don't seem as dizzying as they would normally be. But it's a record that dates back to 2019, winning Group 1 races, and now through to the George Main in 2021. Best horse in the country, absolutely. on performances at the moment. Andrew Bensley, welcome.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Jared. And I think the key with her on Saturday, the rain swept in, the unexpected rain, it started to deteriorate the track, but it was the one thing that stars do. She looked very vulnerable 100 out, but then the stars complete the job, and that's exactly what she was able to do.
It's a great record. I do think it's an underestimated record.
Yeah.
Nine is a brilliant number of Group 1s.
It is. Staggering. I mean, in some way, the Chris Waller stable, because of the success that they had with the mare Winx, everything else sort of lived in her shadow for such a long time. And very elegant, maybe this spring is the time where she does present herself as an absolute champion. You know, I'm not saying that she hasn't done it since Winx finished, but everyone discussed Winx even for another 12 months after she finished racing. But she was dominant. And it was interesting talking with Greg Carpenter from Racing Victoria this morning that the Waller stable had made contact with him about the Turnbull. Under the conditions of that race, Very Elegant could stay in Sydney for one more run, the Hill Stakes, or could come to Melbourne and run in the Turnbull and meet Incentivise and others in that race on the first Saturday in October. She'd carry 57 under the conditions of the race, and Incentivise would carry half a kilo more at 57.5 because of the Group 1 win. So it will be intriguing just to see what Chris Waller does, whether it's Sydney or Melbourne next run. Normally, they'd like to have one run in Melbourne before the Cox Plate.
Yeah.
So it's a case of whether he keeps that up again.
Eduardo beat Nature Strip. Gloriously enigmatic sprinter, Nature Strip. It just fitted.
It did.
I was watching that race thinking, I think he's going to get beaten again here. He amuses me endlessly, Nature Strip. I love him.
I wasn't too sure. You know, I thought Eduardo's tried everything here and Willie sort of, I don't think he's in a quiet, then he did. Nash Rawilla said to us this morning on SEN Track that he was always confident of Eduardo's strength because Joe Pride had given him 3 barrier trials into this race on Saturday, and that's unusual, but he had the fitness. And Joe Pride said to me this morning as well, that I always, in the back of my mind, John Size, who he worked for when Joe Pride was starting off, Joe worked with John Size, and he's gone to Hong Kong and now a world-class trainer. He said, when in doubt, trial him again. And that's why he gave him the 3. And it ended up maybe just that strength of that third trial got him over the line.
Who will run against Zaki on Saturday in the Underwood?
Probabil is going to at this stage.
Excellent.
Jamie Richards saying just a short time ago, he said could about 2 hours ago, and now he's saying we're definitely leaning that way. Nominations come out in the next sort of 45 minutes, so that'll help him. But Zaki's there. Superstorm's going to be there. Sir Dragonette galloped very impressively at the Valley this morning, but will run in the Underwood. So the class is going to be there. It'll be a test for whoever, Probabil will go there most likely.
How great to see Daniel Moore in a Group 1.
It was. I tried to get him this morning. I think he was snoozing after everything that he's done since Saturday. 40-year-old, you know, putting in the hard yards, teams up with Bussenden and Young, who you know, gives him lots of opportunities because he goes down there every Monday for jump outs. He's there most mornings for track work. It was just a great story. And the emotion that he showed was the story, that how much energy goes into everything.
I loved how he reflected. He'd seen other jockeys do it and get emotional and thought they were all soft. And then it just completely grabbed him. What do you want to do to your top 5, Hoss? You've got Zaki at 1, Very Elegant 2, Masked Crusader 3, Animo 4, Behemoth 5.
Yeah, I'm changing it a little bit. Yeah. So we're going to move on this through the week, through the next number of weeks. I'm going to put Animo at 5 because it'll run this week. And just getting news is that the Golden Rose meeting will go ahead at Rose Hill. There had been some talk that it may not, simply because Rose Hill's in a lockdown area, but just getting confirmation that Golden Rose is going there. So 5 Animo, 4 Nature Strip. I'm bringing in Nature Strip. I should have had him somewhere last week. 3 Eduardo, 2 Zaki, and I've got to come with you for the ride at Very Elegant. Very hard to ignore the obvious. I will say that Behemoth and Probabil, I'm not too sure whether they would have won the Sir Rupert Clark, either of them, but they didn't get a lot of luck around the bend. The draws went against them. Everyone was swooping out wide and they couldn't get clear running at a vital time. So they're right in the mix in the top five.
Very elegant stays one for me. I'm unperturbed by the defeat of Nature Strip at two. That's the one he has every campaign. Incentivize three, Zaki four, who rises if he wins the Underwood, but I just want to see that happen. And obviously, Mask Crusade has to get bounced because of that run. So provisionally, five's the winner of the Golden Rose for me. Animo, let's see.
Yeah.
Let's see if Remark can beat Animo or however that pans out.
Melbourne's weather a bit dicey as the week goes on. Few showers around. Sydney's the opposite. They're going to have a beautiful track at Rose Hill. We haven't raced there since late July because of the lockdown, and they got 27 degrees Saturday.
Perfect. Good to see you.
Thanks, Jared.
Bensley on SEN track Monday to Thursday, 8 till 11 a.m. and Saturday mornings, 9 till 12.